1 Samuel 13 through 15. You know, this is really one of the sad chapters of the Bible. It really is. You look at Israel wanted a king, and so God said, give him a king. But then that king gets in place and brings the victory, and we, if we look at chapter 13, we see that even his son, Jonathan, would have been a great king, right? It looks like he would have been a great king. And so it all looks like it's going to work out fine, but then something happens. And Saul trespasses and transgresses. And the whole course then changes. And I know for us to look back at it, it's hard for us to get in that mindset that Saul was going to be a great king and then Jonathan would have been a great king. You know, but it's a great story when we look at Saul. You know, here's this guy who's the nothing of nothingness. He said, I'm small, my nation's small, my family's small. I mean, who would want me to be king? But of course, it said he stood head and shoulders above everybody in Israel. And so he was, you know, the appearance of what they might look up to as a king. But right off, you know, it says in verse 1, chapter 13, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. So 3,000 men, that's all he chooses to be, you know, the enforcers, the military, the defenders. And it says in verse 3, Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was at Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten the garrison of the Philistines. And that Israel also was had in abomination with the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. The Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Beth-Aven. So Saul has how many? 3,000, and he's divided them out, right? 2,000 to 1,000. Sent everybody else home. And now the Philistines show up in mass. I mean, it just says you couldn't count them all. Like the sand by the seashore. It's just so many of them. And you talk about a demonstration of power and intimidation. That's really what it was. But Jonathan had a victory, and so they said, okay, well, we'll show you what it's all about. And they showed up with everybody. Verse 6, when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, the people did hide themselves in caves and thickets and rocks and high places and in pits. They just scattered. They just found a place to hide. We can't defend our nation that way. We can't defend our faith that way. And yet, as you look at it in regard to faith, that's exactly what has happened in our country over the last several decades, is we have withdrawn from the marketplace, from the public square. We've withdrawn, and we have our faith. We are true believers, but we don't talk about it at work. And we don't talk about it at school, and we don't talk about it at family gatherings, right? There's two things you never discuss at a family gathering, religion and politics. But you know that it's going to happen, and it should happen. I don't recall exactly who it was, but someone was telling me that they had somebody coming over to the house, and they had let them know, I'll come over for holiday meals, Thanksgiving or Christmas, whatever it was, but I don't want to be there if there's going to be a prayer. I don't want any of this prayer stuff or this God stuff. And so if you're going to do that, I'm not coming. And how tragic it is that we've allowed them to push us to the rocks and the pits with our faith. And that's what's happened here. They said, well, there's more of them than there are of us. And so they went and hid. Verse 7, some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. They were terrified. How many of you have ever been terrified? Okay, but that's when your courage comes out. Courage is not when you do it. Courage is when you do it and you're scared to do it, but you do it anyway. That's called courage. And if it weren't for being afraid, it would be nothing courageous about it. And verse 8, he tarried there 7 days, according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So they were all, again, slowly but surely, they all kind of just disappeared. They went away. Verse 9, Saul said, bring here a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. What's the problem with that? Not his job. That's the priest's job. But he's grasping at straws. He's desperate. He's desperate to do something to turn this situation around. And so he knows that it is God that gives the victory. And he knows that it is their common faith that really keeps them as a nation. And so he turns to that and he says, I know what I'll do. I'll give an offering. And that'll get the people to come back and that'll get God to help us out. So we'll just do that. Verse 10, and it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. As soon as I have found, and I know I say this frequently, I have found that right before the victory arrives is when I give up. Is that what happens with you? Yesterday, we were trying to get the sound all situated, and there's some technical things that were going on. And finally, one of the family members said, well, if you can't get the sound to play along with the PowerPoint, then just play the music you were playing it earlier. The words were no sooner out of her mouth when the music started working. Because we give up. We quit just before the recovery, just before the victory, just before success. And that's what happened. I always go back in my mind to a time when I was driving north on I-95 in a storm. And I mean one of those storms where you can't see. And everybody starts getting in the right lane and turning their flashers on and all that kind of stuff. It was just one of those. And of course, I was driving slow. And I thought, well, the problem is if I pull over to the side of the road like they are, I'll never get out of this storm. And here just a minute, I was out of the storm from under that cloud. And there were all those cars that were, 100, 200, 300 feet back in the cloud. And if they would have just gone another 100 feet, they'd have been out of it. And that's what happens to us. We quit. If we'll just keep going, we'll make it. But we give up too soon. And Saul gave up on Samuel. And well, Samuel's not here, and he's supposed to be here. And since he's not here, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. I'm just not going to wait any longer. And as soon as he got finished, Samuel came. Verse 11, Samuel said, what hast thou done? Saul said, because I saw the people were scattered from me, and thou camest not within the days appointed. You're late. Right? If you'd have been here, where have we seen that before? Didn't Mary tell Jesus that after Lazarus died? If you'd have been here, Martha, my brother had not died. If you'd have been here, it's your fault. The people were scattered. Thou camest, so it's the people's fault because they gave up. It's your fault because you were late. The Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. It's the Philistines' fault. It's everybody's fault but mine. And that's a problem. when we cannot take responsibility. How many of us, and you don't have to raise your hand on this, but how many of us have taken responsibility for things that really were not within our control? We took responsibility and we were held accountable and we made ourselves accountable for something that really wasn't even our fault. But we owned up to it because we had to get past that to get anything done. And if we'll say, okay, it's my fault, then that part of the argument settled and we can start working on a solution. But as long as we sit around and say the Philistines, the people, it's you and it's Eve, it's the serpent, you know, it's everybody else's fault. We've got to get past that. And so we just say, look, it's my fault. Now let's fix it. And so Saul wouldn't do that. Saul blamed everybody else. Verse 12, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord, and I forced myself. You know, Samuel, I didn't want to do it, but I made myself do it because I needed to go before God. Verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly, not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever, but now thy kingdom shall not continue. Now let's step back and just remember this relationship between Samuel and Saul. Put yourself in Samuel's shoes. What's on your mind? What are you thinking? I told him not to get a king. I told him if they got a king, he'd ruin everything. I told him they just needed to look to God. Now they got a king in here. He's already blown it. He's only 2 years into it. He's already messed up. And so this idea of a king and, of course, the continuance of the royal family. But now he's messed it up. He said, you can't be king anymore. God's not going to continue your throne, your kingdom. Verse 14, the Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. You didn't do it. Whose fault? Go ahead. Right?
But his impatience and his lack of faith changed history.
And that's a great point, is that God was bringing such a overwhelming defeat to Israel that if they had won that, it would have been, you know, incredible. Not just the presence of all the Philistines, you know, thousands upon thousands, but the fact that a lot of Israel ran and hid. You know, who do you think of when you see that? I think of Gideon. He said, you got too many people. You got it. So he comes out and goes, if anybody wants to go home, you can go home. Well, some of them did, didn't they? God said, that's still too many. He said, okay. You know, so he started cutting back, and finally he ends up with how many? 300. He said, now you got enough. Now you got enough people. And, you know, instead of 30,000 people, now he got 300 people. But that was really God showing. Well, now that all these people have gone, all these people have quit, who's left? All right, Saul, Jonathan. And as we go into the next chapter, we see that Jonathan, with one other man, gave the victory. So what if Saul had trusted God, had been patient with God, had looked to God and waited on Samuel to show up and had led that victory? It would have changed everything. But his impatience proved detrimental to his, not only his legacy, but his family's legacy, and brought harm to the nation of Israel. So the Lord has sought someone, a man after his own heart, and hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. And so we go on here and we notice in verse number 19, there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. The Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. So they wouldn't let them have that stuff. They had the farm tools, which they could sharpen. They had files for that. But they didn't have any swords, except the only ones that had swords were Saul and Jonathan. And that's in verse number 22. In chapter 14, it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he told not his father. This is a secret, private, personal mission. Saul tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron. Isn't it interesting the way that the Bible gives us details like that? He's under a pomegranate tree. Didn't you say under a tree? Right? And it really impressed me a couple of weeks ago. We read that Jesus made them to sit on the green grass. You know, just doesn't seem like it means much to us, but it helps to form the image in our minds. And the people that were with him were about 600. Verse 3, Ahiah, son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. Between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side, a sharp rock on the other side. The name of one was Bozez. The name of the other was Sina. The forefront of the one was situate northward over against Michmash, and the other southward over against Gibeah. Verse 6, and Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. If only Saul had considered that. Jonathan understood that the battle was not his. We always sing that song, Little David, right? The battle's not mine, said Little David. Lord, it's thine, I'm in your favor, right? And so that was, his hope was in God. His hope was not in his chariots or his swords or his footmen. His hope was in God. He said, come on, let's go. Won't tell anybody. Won't make a big deal about it. It's just going between us and God. Verse 8, Jonathan said, behold, we'll pass over to these men and we'll discover ourselves to them. We're not even going to sneak in. We're just going to walk in and let them see us. Talk about a strategy. Verse 10, if they say thus, come up unto us, we will go up. The Lord has delivered them to our hand, and this shall be a sign to us. Both of them discovered themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they hid themselves. The men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, come up to us, we will show you a thing. Jonathan said to his armor bearer, come up after me. The Lord has delivered them into the hand of... This is a man of hope, isn't it? He has confidence in God. I mean, he's walking right into the lion's den. And the people that followed Saul, the Bible said, they followed him trembling. Jonathan's walking right up into the garrison. Come with me, we got this. Two of them. Now, and I can't help but think, I always go back to this. Jonathan would have made a great king, wouldn't he? Boy, what a king he would have been. All that we see in David, that's why they became such great friends. They were so much alike. Jonathan said, we got this. Just two of us, but we got this. Verse 13, Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer slew after him. Modern day, we might think of somebody like Chuck Norris, right? I know Chuck Norris is an actor, but if you ever watch, I'd go see Jean, Carolyn's sister. I'd go visit her every afternoon. She'd have Chuck Norris. Walker, Texas Ranger would be on. We'd go in there and watch that. And, well, he could fight them all, couldn't he? And I know that's TV, but same thing, you know, here. Jonathan goes in, he just starts whopping them, and his armor bearer behind them finishing the job. Verse 14, that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within, as it were, a half acre of land, which a yoke of oxen might plow. Again, the details. And there was a trembling in the host in the field among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled. And the earth quaked, so it was a very great trembling. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another. I mean, the Philistines are in such a rush to get out of there. They're so terrified. It's like a stampede. You don't want to trip in a stampede. You know, we see it over and over again where we have these nightclubs and venues such as that where there's a fire or something and people get trampled on the way out. And so that's what we're seeing here. These people are so scared, they want to flee and go back home so much, they're so afraid of Israel now, that they're running each other over. I mean, they're terrified. And Saul can see what's going on, you know, from where he is. He can see the scattering of the people. And he says, verse 17, number now and see who has gone from us. When they numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. Saul says, who can be causing this? Because we're all here. He said, find out who's not here. Only two people. Two people. Just two people weren't there. And Saul said to Ahiah, bring hither the ark of God. The ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel. It came to pass while Saul talked to the priest, the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said to the priest, withdraw thy hand. Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, and they came to battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a great discomfiture. They were killing each other. Why? Well, what do you mean you're going to leave? You can't leave. We've got to stay here. We've got a job to do. I'm leaving. You're a coward. And then they went to killing each other. And that, you know, that's probably about how it went down. Verse 21, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. Did you notice that? There were some of the Jews, some of the Hebrews, who had defected. They had joined the other side. They decided that they weren't going to fight for Israel. They weren't going to fight with Israel. They said, we'll just go ahead and surrender to the Chinese, I mean the Philistines, and we'll just be communist, or, you know, we'll just surrender and be part of it. And we're not going to stand up and fight for it. We'll just join the other side. Right? If you can't beat them, join them. That's what they had decided. And then all of a sudden, things start to shift back the other way. They say, hold on a second, we're Jews too. You don't want somebody like that on your team who just goes whichever way the wind blows. But that's what they're dealing with. Well, they said, we're going to go back. Verse 22, likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard the Philistines fled, they also followed hard after them in the battle. We call that jumping on the bandwagon, don't we? So the Lord saved Israel that day. Verse 23. The Lord saved Israel that day. Well, who else could we give credit to? Two people? Two people chased the whole Philistine army? No, God did it. Jonathan said before he went, let's see what God will do. Verse 24, now, there was something that had happened. Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eat any food until evening, that I may be avenged upon mine enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. He said, look, we're not going to, don't take time to eat. We've got to fight, fight, fight until the sun goes down. We are going to continue this battle. No breaks, no food. Stay after it. And all they of the land, verse 25, came to a wood. There was honey upon the ground. People were come to the wood. Behold, the honey dropped. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. You know, it's one thing to be hungry, but it's another thing to stay hungry when you got food right there, isn't it? And honey, man, you talk about something that would turn your energy around. But here they were, just famished. They're hungry. They're worn out. They're tired. They're weak in their minds. They're weak in their body. They're weak in their spirit. And boy, if they just had something that would have turned it around, that would have been great. Here it is. But the king said no, and so they just walked by it. Verse 27, but Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. He put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand, dipped it in the honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were in, boy, that sugar rush. Boom. Felt a lot better, didn't he? Verse 28, then answered one of the people and said, thy father straightly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. Jonathan said, my father troubled the land. He said, that was a bad decision. I pray you how, you know, look how mine eyes have been enlightened because I tasted a little of this honey. It only took a little bit. How much more, verse 30, if haply the people had freely eaten today the spoil of their enemies which they had found. For had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines, if we'd had more energy, couldn't we have done more? But now everybody's faint, worn out, famished. Verse 32, the people flew upon the spoil and took the sheep, the oxen, calves, slew them on the ground, and the people did eat them with the blood. They were starving. At least in their minds they were. You ever just been hungry in your mind, not really in your belly? It happens to us, doesn't it? But they felt so, and I just had the word. They felt like they had been denied something. And since they felt like they'd been denied something, they wanted it more. You know, it's incredible to me how if a child comes to you at bedtime, they go to bed first, and they come back out and they say, I need a drink of water. Now, here's what we could do. We could spend 5 minutes arguing about why you don't need a drink of water. You're not thirsty. Or we could spend 30 seconds, get them a drink of water, and they'll have a drink of water to go to bed. Whew, problem solved. Sam will come to me, and he'll say, I want some cereal. And so I'll get a little bowl, and I'll put a little cereal in the bottom, just dry cereal. And he can sit in my lap, and he'll take two or three bites, put the bowl down, and go to sleep. Or I could fight with him and say, no, it's bedtime, don't eat. You don't need cereal right now. You've already eaten, you know, half a cow, you know, whatever. You're not hungry. It's just in your mind that you're hungry. I've been hungry in my mind, not my belly. But the problem is that we can't get it out of our mind. So if we can satisfy it, we're done. Same thing here. They're just in their mind, they're so famished. They're not as hungry as they act like. They haven't been denied food for months. You know, I had a friend that was a POW, and he told me about the things in World War II where they were starving. And they were denied food. And when they finally got it, you know, he describes something like this right here. They seized on it. But they did eat it with the blood. Now, of course, the Bible told them not to do that. The Lord said, don't do that. They told Saul, verse 33, saying, behold, the people sin against the Lord, and they eat with the blood. Number one, they've transgressed the oath that the king made. But more than that, they've transgressed the law that God made. And Saul said, you have transgressed. Just roll a great stone to me this day. Just kill me. Run me over. I can't live with this. Saul said, disperse yourselves. Verse 34. Bring me hither every man his ox and every man his sheep. Slay them here and eat. Sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night and slew them there. And Saul built an altar to the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built to the Lord. Saul said, let us go down after the Philistines by night, spoil them till morning light, and let us not leave a man of them. They said, do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. Then said the priest, let us draw near hither to God. And Saul asked counsel of God, verse 37, shall I go down to the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But God answered him not that day. What do you do when you pray and God doesn't give you an answer? You don't move. You don't act. I've probably told you the story when I was preaching in view of a call at a certain church in Central Florida. And I'd gone two Sundays and preached. And that Wednesday night after, the deacon called and he says, so what do you want to do? I said, well, I'm praying about it. I said, y'all pray about it, I'll pray about it. He said, well, we're ready to extend a call. And I said, well, you let me pray about it. I said, I can't go anywhere until God tells me. And so the next night he called. He said, well, you know, we need an answer. We can't wait forever. I said, well, if you need an answer, God hadn't given me one, I guess the answer's no. I can't go unless God tells me to go. And he was a little huffy about that. That's how it works. You got to wait for God to lead. And so when Saul prays and God doesn't answer, what do? Saul said, draw near here, verse 38, and see wherein has the sin been this day. Well, they cast lots, and who was the sin with? It was with Jonathan. What was the penalty? Death. Jonathan says, well, it was me. I did it. Verse 44, Saul answered, God, do so and more, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. Saul was going to kill his own son. The people said to Saul, shall Jonathan die? This is verse 45. Who has wrought this great salvation? In Israel, God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he has wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan that he died not. Again, would have made a great king. Right? It was personal. And so Saul had, it was personal for him. I'll be avenged on my enemies. And it wasn't about God, and it wasn't really even about the nation. And then you look at, but look at what happened. God didn't answer. And so Saul says, cast lots. Well, the lot fell to Jonathan. I mean, this is a common biblical theme when it comes to casting lots and identifying the guilty party. But Jonathan was the one that led the people or that gave them the idea to go ahead and eat. But that was the king's charge, not God's charge that they shouldn't eat. But his leadership, You know, God was not given an answer, but Saul thought, well, this has got to, you know, this got to be about sin. How many of us ever had a time with God where it really wasn't about sin? We were just asking for the wrong thing. And so to automatically go, well, there must be sin, it must be somebody, and they must pay. I mean, the precedent is there. Go back to Achan. But the people saved Jonathan, and he didn't die. They, not taking responsibility. And that's what Saul was doing. And even when it came to his own son, as long as it wasn't him, he'd rather blame his own son. And it happens a lot, doesn't it? People are selfish. I heard the bell, so to sum up, in chapter 15 is probably, you know, the powerful part of this lesson. They seize on the Philistines. And God's instruction was to destroy everything, every person, every beast, take nothing. But in verse number 8, the Bible says he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites. Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, and they kept a lot of stuff alive, and God said, destroy it all. You know, when it comes to sin, we say, well, I'm going to destroy all the sin except this one, and I like this one, and I can't give this up, and I don't want to repent of that, and I want to keep that in my life. And then came the word of the Lord to Samuel, saying, it repenteth me, verse 11, chapter 15, that I have set up Saul to be king. For he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried to the Lord all night. Samuel was not in favor of having a king. He wasn't really impressed with Saul, but he had grown to love him as his minister, as his prophet. In verse 13, Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed be thou the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. Samuel said, what meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, the lowing of the oxen which I hear? Oh, verse 15, Brother Ronnie, he said, they have brought them. For the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord thy God. Now the rest we have destroyed. We destroyed, they preserved. And Samuel reminds him, weren't you little in your own sight, verse 17? Wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? You thought nothing of yourself. You had no confidence. You had no ambition. You had no vision. And God made you the king of Israel. Verse 22, Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. And Saul says, I have sinned. Go to God on my behalf and tell him I repent. Go with me to worship again. Verse 26, Samuel said, I will not return with thee. Thou hast rejected the word of the Lord. The Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned about to go away, Saul laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle, and it rent. He wanted to go. He wanted to repent. It reminds me what the Bible says about Esau. It says he found no room for repentance, though he sought it with tears. Esau sold his birthright, and after he had done it, he regretted it, but there was no way back. And what Saul has done here, there's no way back. God's done. We have to know there are consequences for our actions. Let's take a break.